how's it going?
Hi, and Erica, welcome back. I did a show with your hubby, and I really, I know you're married, but I kind of like felt like I was cheating on you, but so I'm thrilled.
You should.
I know. I'm feel horrible about it, but anyway, I'm glad to see you, have both of you on. It's been a long time since we talked, and Cole, hopefully we helped out your Patreon a little bit.
Definitely. And thank you.
I'm glad it's going well. So yeah, I think a good week for you to come on. We don't predict this stuff, but wow, what a week.
Yeah, it seems like this week is sort of tailor made for me to be on. I'm not sure about you, Erica.
Well, I'm making my triumphant return to the show based on my amazing prognostication in the former episode that I was on, and it has come true, and we're going to talk about it.
All right. Okay. Well, I don't remember that, but I'm not going to go back and check, but I'll take your word for it. you're a very brilliant woman, so I'm not going to doubt your prognostication. Yeah, I'm curious your thoughts on some of these. And Erica, what's your opinion on the color teal?
I don't have any problem with it, and I didn't know that others did. I didn't know it was a thing. Cole had to send me a link to an article about it so I could read up.
It's a thing. So, and you know what? I never thought the teal would be a news item, but it is absolutely a news item, and I can't wait to talk about it with you both. So I'm fine with teal. Cole, you cool with teal?
I've got a whole spiel about this.
Uh-oh.
Do you want it now? Or
no.
You have a teal spiel.
Yes, we can save it for later if you want.
We'll okay. save it. All right, so we're going to talk about the November releases. That's the big thing. We have a couple news items. We have some, yeah, not a whole lot. I think the November releases are going to occupy this episode. But if you don't mind, can we talk about our Patreon for a moment?
Please.
Thank you. We have two new ones this week. We have Donnie Lambert. Thank you, Donnie. And this has been the case lately, but I don't recognize the name Donnie Lambert. So as always, show up. Please say hi in our groups and make yourself known. We also have John Underwood. Just today took the plunge. So thank you, John. Hopefully you'll be in our random Everybody Gets Criterion selection month. We'll see. That's in October. And then we had a bonus cast this week, and this one was so special that I didn't want to keep it from Patreons or for Patreons, because speaking of timing, Cole, an episode tailor-made. So David Blakeslee, good friend of myself and the podcast, and I think a lot of you all, on the day of the announcements, right around the time that they came out on Criterion, he became a grandpa, we'd been planning to do a little quick reaction for the Patreon. Usually I do those with Mark, but he was traveling, and so it just turned out. And of course, he was telling me, "Hey, the baby may come any day now." And I, David, it's fine. I'll find somebody else. No big deal. I'll even solo it. And he said, "No. I'll make time." And he did. And he was very gracious with his time. But it was kind of great to get his reaction. Either of you get to hear David?
Yeah,
that was beautiful.
Yeah, he's very, very happy for him. We said that's the best release of the month, the best announcement, the birth announcement.
Is there a spine number on that one?
Yeah, there probably is. I don't know how far back you want to count, but there's a spine, that's for sure. We'll see how strong that spine is in the years to come. But congratulations, David Blakeslee, on being a grandpa. That's awesome news. I think that's his first. I'm pretty sure that's his first. But
yeah, that's what he said. It was a new phase of life for him.
New phase of life. And I'm just blessed to have shared that moment with him. Really, I think his wife was showering, getting ready to go to the hospital. So yeah, that was awesome. And we had our anniversary episode this past week. Took a while for me to edit it because I don't know if you ever experienced this, but we had audio issues. Yeah?
Once in a while we'll have that, but our system is so stripped down just between the two of us since we're both here in the same room. Mm. We don't run into it as often.
Yeah, that makes sense. And actually mine was my own mistake. I just hit the wrong key and saved, and then it's like, crap, I have to do half the show over. So it's okay. It actually was easier than I thought. But yeah, we had our 3-year anniversary, and that show just hit today, as we're recording on Sunday the 19th. So it'll probably be a few days before this comes out. But you all had an anniversary too. We kind of sort of share podcast anniversaries. So happy anniversary to the Magic Lantern.
Thank you.
It's still weird that we started right about the same time.
Yeah,
almost. I think within a week of each other.
Yeah. So did you celebrate? I learned that leather is what you give each other for 3rd anniversaries.
That's quite apropos actually, because, yes.
Now that you say that, we did.
We host a regular movie night, and for our anniversary, we decided to do a kind of a bigger blowout. So we rented a screening space.
Really?
And we showed, The Strange Vice of Mrs. Ward, so definitely leather appropriate.
There you go. Okay, well, I was wondering where you were going to go with that. Could have gone in a couple directions. your screening nights are just, fantastic. I think you invited me to one, it was just so cool. I couldn't say no, but I'm, a few states away from you.
Yeah.
One day.
There's a standing invitation anytime.
Thank you. One day I will. It almost happened this year, but my company chose the same week to take their vacation. So one day. Actually, might be going to Portland. We're kind of looking at March. I'm going to go to Portland, so might get to see Ryan.
Oh, that'll be cool.
That would be cool. So shall we get into November?
Let's do it.
All right. So November 2008 announcements came out. Of course, I guess the wind was kind of taken out of the sails because the Bergman announcement came out. I don't know if you all were expecting much. I thought we'd get Ambersons. That was hinted at by Rosenbaum. But I wasn't sure. Yeah, I thought maybe just that, and I would be fine with that. But did you expect much?
I thought it was going to be a pretty thin lineup. How can you compete with anything else? If you just give us the Bergman box, I'm satisfied. So anything else feels just like gravy.
Yes. So we have some gravy. Erica, I don't know, Erica, I know we've talked a few times about this, but do you follow it as closely as Cole and I do? Like on the 15th, are you refreshing your browser or are you just kind of like,
No, I truly don't collect and appreciate in the same way that both of you do, especially not in the same way that Cole does. I do get the email, so I'm always excited to see what's coming up, but generally Cole has told me before I even have a chance to look at it in depth.
Yeah, my wife is probably gonna have some parallels there, but when you hear Cole or when you read your email, do you get excited sometimes? And of course you watch them with Cole, right? Some of them?
Oh, 100%. Yeah, it's, I don't want to frame it as, I'm the put upon wife, because that is absolutely not the case. I'm as excited as he is, just my bent doesn't usually go in that direction. But yeah, I always watch it. I'm always excited to get them and very excited for these choices, especially Ambersons. And then we watched True Stories the other night, so cannot wait.
Yeah, I'm going to get your thoughts about that. Yeah, I think one thing that Mark and I talked about in our episode we just kind of touched on it, is that I'm a little more active on social media than he is. And I think in your pairing, Cole is probably a little more active than you are. Is that fair?
Agreed.
So, yeah. And we have, did I mention we're going to be talking about Teal soon? anyway, I digress. The first release is November 6th, and it is a story from Chikamatsu, or Chikamatsu Monogatari, although they didn't name it that, which is also known The Crucified Lovers. It's Mizoguchi from 1954. I think I already mentioned on our cast, I saw it, loved it. I think just this era of Mizoguchi is just so, really his prime. I mean, not that he really had a bad era, but have you seen this? And Cole, I'm guessing maybe you have.
This is a Mizoguchi that I am wholly unfamiliar with, and that's always super exciting. It's like opening a present for me.
Okay, good.
And the description of it, it could be film noir if I didn't know any better. Lovers on the run, star-crossed romance, falsely accused and swept up in a rush to judgment. It sounds great. Just the stills look so luminous.
They are. I saw it on, I don't know if it was DVD, Netflix, or it might have been a Region B. I don't know where I see all these things, but the print I saw was not great. And I haven't seen the stills. They're probably teal.
It's just that one in particular that I've seen a couple of times, that rowboat confession scene.
Okay, yeah.
And there's a scene of her crouched. They're crouched in a field, and it looks like light is just pouring out of her kimono. She's so beautiful. I can't wait to see the thing. The one thing I read that drew the analogy that this is Romeo and Juliet to Sancho the Bailiff's King Lear.
Oh, mm-hmm.
So I am totally in for that.
That's good. And and speaking of rowboats, the cover is a still from the film, but it has a I don't know if you kind of a rust colored.
Yeah, almost sepia tone.
Yeah, in a way, yeah. I don't remember if that's the color from the film. It's a black and white film. What am I thinking? It is, right? It's been a while. So yeah, Kurosawa called it a great masterpiece that could have only been made by Mizoguchi. It has a new 4K restoration. And I know that this was on Masters of Cinema, but I think it's been a little while. So this is definitely a more recent print. And we have a documentary or a video essay by Dudley Andrew about Mizoguchi, the author behind the Mature Enfant. Is that right?
Let's throw it to our French expert.
You would have to spell it for me. I'm sorry.
M-E-T-T-E-U-R, Mature Enfant.
Mature Ensemble.
Okay, I'm close. All right.
I'm very good.
It's working. All right. So I wouldn't say it's a stacked release, but I'm not going to complain about a Mizoguchi 4K. Any thoughts on the supplements, Erica? Did you take a look at this one?
I didn't. I apologize.
Well, have you seen much Mizoguchi?
I don't think so. It's a big hole for me.
Okay. No new Ugetsu or Sancho, the bailiff?
Ugetsu, yeah.
Okay. Oh, that's a good one. I think, I don't know, Cole, do you think that would be Erica's, do you like slow 50s cinema?
Oh,
absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. She'll totally be into that based on what I know that she likes.
Okay, well, this is not a homework assignment, but I would highly suggest watching all of the Mizoguchi in the collection, especially Sancho the Bailiff. I think that's your analogy of King Lear at Romeo and Juliet is perfect. But all right, and yeah, I love the cover. Can't wait for this one. I would have been fine with this one. Well, actually, okay, next we'll get to Some Like It Hot. November 13th, Billy Wilder. So we have a picture of Marilyn Monroe on the cover. And actually, I didn't notice this at first glance, but there's also Jack Lemmon and Tony Curtis there, kind of photoshopped, of course, photoshopped on her legs. Did you see that?
I did. It's kind of an odd batch of covers this week, or this month, I should say. But I really like the cover art for all these, strangely enough.
I think that, yeah, it's definitely a good month for covers. I think this one is the one that's gotten the most criticism, just because maybe because it is Marilyn Monroe. And I don't know if I'd say that's a seductive or suggestive pose, but it's, you know, it's Marilyn Monroe in the 50s. And I think it's safe to say that Lemon and Curtis are kind of steal the show in this film. Maybe I'd say Lemon especially. So I'll start with Erica this time. Do you like Some Like It Hot? I'm sure you've seen it probably a few times.
I have, yeah, a few times. It's never been one of my favorite Billy Wilder or Marilyn Monroe's. I do really enjoy it. I actually do like the artwork on this one because I think it's a different view of Marilyn. And especially this was a different film for her. She looks unlike she has in what we might be more used to with her filmography. So I think it was an interesting choice. It plays up a different angle of her.
Yeah, I think you're right. It's not, it's kind of a sultry look, but it's not like a bombshell, like a pinup kind of look. And most, like, you know, The 7 Year Itch or, you know, a lot of her other films, I think they highlighted her looks. Here, she has some attitude. And what do you think of the Lemon and Curtis?
I like the pairing. Joey Lewis, I think, is the best part of it for me.
Right.
He's always going to be the highlight.
Yeah, it's been a while. I don't remember Joey Lewis. So.
Oh my gosh! Yeah. Okay, that's your homework assignment.
Well, I'll watch it again in November. But the one thing I have heard is the same thing that you have said, is that this is not people's favorite Wilder. I haven't heard that as much about Monroe. I think it's fine. It's iconic. But David and I use the word, and this is not a word I like to use, but just because it becomes such a pop culture icon, overrated. Do you think that's fair with this film, Cole?
I would definitely say so in one regard. It's a strong month when the thing that I am least excited about is the AFI's number one comedy of all time.
There you go.
When it's sitting on top of that list, you know, we can debate the accuracy of that, but that is a pretty high rating in general, and probably a little bit too much, a little too diplomatic, maybe.
And I think that's where the overrated comment comes from, because there have been a lot of great comedies, and Some Like It Hot has just kind of been always there at the top. Now, I'm not criticizing. I think it's a fine film. I think it's funny. I would, as far as Jack Lemmon, I'd probably take The Apartment or some of his others. But I think it's actually impactful as far as the cross dressing. Now, I wouldn't confuse it with transgender or anything like that. I don't know. Would you say this is a progressive movie?
I think that there is something kind of stealthily modern about it. If you go back and watch it now as an older person, I came to it as a kid, so my view has definitely changed over the years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I'm not sure, though, how necessarily progressive it is at the same time. So, no, I think it's an interesting choice, but I probably have more to say when we get to Tootsie.
That's actually quite an interesting comparison. Yeah, and actually it's, I mean, even though they're cross-dressing, in a way they're kind of making fun of that. And so maybe in a way it's regressive. So yeah, it'll be interesting for me to rewatch it now. Just giving, you know, in the last 10 years, our modern sensibilities, I think, have changed. I'm not saying I was ever pro or against cross-dressing, but perception changes over time. So we have a lot of features, but a lot of older features. It is a 4K restoration. We have an 89 commentary, and I think we established that's from the Laserdisc. And we have some things on the costume design, and I think that, and there's a costume historian. I didn't know that job existed. You want to go for costume historian, Cole?
That featurette on the costume design is actually the one that I'm looking forward to most. If it's on the DVD that we have, I haven't noticed and haven't watched it. So if it's being ported over from that, it might not be new, but it'll be new to me. And that was the thing that stuck out when I was looking at all the special features.
I'm with you. My limited theater background, I do find that to be incredibly fascinating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think my memory is the costumes were pretty great, actually, and especially, you know, Lemon cross-dressing. I guess would you say drag or cross-dressing? What is it? Oh, they say drag on the description.
Okay, that's what I would have said.
Yeah, I guess cross-dressing probably wasn't a term back then. I don't know if drag was a term. I wasn't around. So then we have Billy Wilder, 1982, with the Dick Cavett Show. Boy, the Dick Cavett Show just, it's the gift that keeps on giving. I never watched it in the 80s. I don't know about you all. Maybe I should have. But Billy Wilder is always... So I did a lot of scholarship on Billy Wilder when I was in school, and I kind of thought that even though he was brilliant in his own way, I think he kind of benefited from a couple good writers, Brackett and Diamond, and he kind of stumbled on his, not saying he's not talented, I'm not taking shots at Billy Wilder, but yeah, he's more of a personality. Do you guys like Billy Wilder?
I do. I remember when we were doing our apartment episode, we did have a discussion about director versus writer when it comes to Wilder, and especially the film itself. So he's created some of my most all-time favorites, and yet I don't necessarily think of him as someone near and dear to my heart.
Yeah, and that was also a Diamond movie, and I think I'm more in the Brackett camp. So I forget, I think it was after Sunset Boulevard that they parted, maybe a little later than that. But yeah, I think some of the 30s and the 40s and 50s are early 50s, I should say, are my favorites. But this is a fun movie, and it's a huge get. I think this is, in fact, I saw on Reddit, I know sometimes Reddit scary, but somebody said, you know, because of all these recent releases on Criterion, I just don't want to buy classic films on disc anymore, just because they might come to Criterion. I mean, 5 years ago, would you have ever expected this to join the collection?
No, this seems kind of a mainstream choice, but if, you know, following the brief, following the charter of the company, classic and contemporary important films, it definitely qualifies.
For sure. I mean, even without that number one AFI comedy, I mean, I'm, you know, we have a lot of, we have Harold Lloyd, Chaplin, The In-Laws, we have a lot of comedies, although I would put this above The In-Laws.
Oh, come on.
Oh, no, sorry. No, incorrect, sir.
All right, I'll serpentine my way out of that one. Some Like It Hot is coming November 13th, so that'll be a big seller. I'm sure there'll be a lot to say about it. Speaking of a lot to say, so we have to me, this is the biggest one. I think, Cole, Erica, you might think the next one might be pretty big. But we have The Magnificent Ambersons. I think this is like one of those lost gems that I don't think we ever expected. I'm almost kind of pinching myself. Not that I think it's, in this state, it's the greatest film, but it's coming out. It's on Criterion. React.
It's pretty dang great. We got to see it, what was that, last year on the big screen?
2015, actually, during the Orson Welles centennial.
And go ahead.
Oh, I'm just incredibly excited. I cannot wait to see what this looks like and what they filled in and what the new experience to watch this is going to be.
Yeah, my first experience was in film class, my first and only, and I remember being kind of disappointed because you see Kane in film class, and then it's like, wow, this, and I think we saw Shanghai at some point, and even though that's not Kane, it's still visually brilliant, but I found this, and I'm like, yeah, something's missing, and something was, but did you enjoy it when you saw it in the theaters?
Very much so.
Okay.
To me, it was a little different. I think it was more valuable as an artifact. To me, you could definitely feel the absence of whatever happened to have been thrown in the Pacific Ocean. And you can't help but wonder what could have been when you are watching it, or at least just after watching it. And that aspect of it was mildly distracting to me.
And that might have been my bias going in, because I did know about that, and I might have been looking for those extra 40 minutes. So if you don't know, RKO threw away 40 minutes of film, and actually this really damaged his career. I mean, he made plenty great films afterward, but not as many with the studio system. And I kind of wonder if those 40 minutes were amazing, which I think they probably were, and they were included, and the reputation was a little bit better in the 40s, I wonder if he might have had a better career, or not a better, but a more successful career. And then the cover, I this is one of my favorite covers of the, in fact, this might be my favorite cover of the month. It's kind of a black and white drawing, and I think, I don't know if this is intentional, but it's a little incomplete, and I wonder if that's, what do you think, is that them visually telling us that it's not all there?
I would think so. These covers are so thoroughly designed and well thought through, with the exception of maybe that Cries and Whispers that had to be taken back. That I think the quality of the artists that they employ, someone was definitely kind of making a sly statement with that.
And speaking of which, this artist was Eric Skillman. He's the creative designer there at Criterion. So this might have been a, actually, it might have been, looks like a little bit of a movie still, a little bit of line art, a little bit of Photoshop. That's he's not an illustrator, I don't believe. Let's get to the supplements, and wow, there's a lot here. So we have, first off, we have two audio commentaries. So we have Robert Carringer, James Naremore, and Jonathan Rosenbaum. I think that's a pretty good trio. Erica, are you a fan?
Unfortunately, I don't know the work enough to say so. I know Cole is. So again, okay. I have to apologize.
No problem. Do you watch commentaries? And you never have to apologize.
I do. I do watch commentaries.
What's the last one we were talking about? Oh, you were telling
School
me just yesterday, School of Rock commentary.
Oh, okay.
Which is actually,
I can give you many tips on School of Rock.
It's
but
pretty illuminating.
I bet.
If I could just throw in another plug for Amberson, speaking of commentary, another reason why I come to things like this, because I grew up knowing the story of this film and being firmly in the camp of Robert Wise is the history's greatest monster for what he did. And then I think watching the film can give you a totally different perspective. So I'm eager again to revisit that whole idea and think about all of these people that played a part in this.
And that's actually a great point. Maybe he was right. Maybe it needed to be cut. And I'm often an advocate for shorter movies, so 88 minutes does not sound like torture to me. If I were to wager, I would guess that that wasn't the case. Maybe somewhere in between. Maybe it should have been an hour and 45 minutes or close to 2 hours. But one thing I wish. Let me first point out that Brad in our group shared an article from, I believe it was Vanity Fair, that talks about some of the missing footage. So I'm going to put that in the notes. That's a good read. Magnificent Obsession. Not the Cirque, but that's just the title of the article. But it's all about the missing footage. So definitely check that out. So I don't know. Do you like the film enough to watch both commentaries?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, certainly.
Okay. I'm sure that they're going to get into all the history behind. I almost wish they could have just done the roadshow version of the Mad World, and kind of just have still shots for what should have been, and they could just talk for a little bit, but. Probably not realistic. Then we have interviews with Simon Callow and Joseph McBride, who are two of my favorite people. I love that Simon Callow is, of course, he was naked in Room with a View. Now he's, well, not now, but he's super smart and a scholar and a film critic and a cultural critic. And we have a visual essay on the cinematography. So, and then more Dick Cavett, and Wells is on Dick Cavett. So, and there's plenty more. And then, of course, there's a bunch of essays, too. So there's an excerpts from an unfinished 1982 memoir. I think this is going to be a pretty robust release as far as size. I think it might be a sizing issue. It sounds like we're all into it, huh?
Yeah, definitely.
And let me just make sure we didn't forget anything else. So there's a silent adaptation of it from 1925. That's interesting. Yeah, I don't know if I'll be into that, but we'll see. All right, well, the next one, I think you're going to have a lot to say. I should apologize for my hate on the instant cast. This is True Stories coming out on November 20th. And when you first look at it, it's just a VHS head upside down on a gradient background. I reacted. I'm like, what the hell? And I think I made some sort of schneid... sarcastic art comment about it not being art, but it's by Tibor Kalman, who is a very reputed artist, and as our good friend Matt Biasar pointed out, he's seen his work in museums. So well done, Mr. Kalman. So you've and actually you've seen the movie. Can you speak to the cover? Go ahead.
I think it's just in the spirit of the film is what it strikes me as, for a couple of reasons. There's, I think, a certain expectation of irony that people had going into it that David Byrne turned on its head with his naivete and sincerity. And I think John Goodman is actually the key to that in the film, his sweetness and earnestness. And so I think that's one thing about it. And I think the other thing, it sort of fits into me with that iconography of the Church of the Subgenius a little bit. That's what it made me think of.
And Cole, weren't you telling me that Kalman was a huge influence on David Byrne as well?
Well, he did Talking Heads record covers, and there's a long connection between those two guys.
Yeah, and I think somebody posted something in that family. I don't know if it was a record cover or not. I love the Talking Heads. I'm not as familiar with their record art, that's a good. A good transition. So this is our first. We have a CD here with 23 songs. So, if you want to argue about the death of physical media, well, let's double down. let's go back to audio media. So I'll just ask, do you play CDs?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Or vinyl? Or
one of these days, as soon as we get our new shelf in here and we start taking videos for our YouTube channel, in addition to our DVD collection, you'll see our CD collection mixed in there as well. It's not as big as it used to be. I've kind of whittled it down, but we certainly collect all sorts of physical media.
Yeah, I mentioned on the InstantCast, I bought a CD in Canada, and you know, I think the CD has gotten unfairly maligned. I remember, not knocking on vinyl, but I just remember they scratched all the time. They sounded like shit after 10 years, so pardon my French. But we have a CD with the complete soundtrack, and I having not seen the film, and I don't think I have the soundtrack. Is this, I don't even know why I bother asking, but do you remember how good the soundtrack is?
I do, only because we just watched it 2 days ago. It is phenomenal, and I'm so looking forward to that. I cannot wait to play that on a trip through Texas. It's going to be perfect.
A trip through Texas. Yeah, you get that luxury. Yeah, I've never thought that I'd be able to put a Criterion in my car and play it. So it's the future, but it's also the past. So yeah, is it like Talking Heads, or is it more like David Byrne's? Because I think David Byrne's music, I just saw him in concert not long ago. It's more kind of like, I don't want to say tribal, but more about groove and beats and that sort of thing.
It's definitely much more Talking Heads. It's kind of on that cusp where I think the last real Talking Heads sounding Talking Heads record was probably Little Creatures. Mm. And it came a couple of years before that. But if the soundtrack is what I think it is, it's going to be all of the performers in the film interpreting those songs, which to me, I like that even better.
Okay, and that's, the highlight cool. was John Goodman's song that he performs as part of the talent show at the end. That's an incredible song.
Yeah, and the Pop Staples song. There's a little voodoo section with Pop Staples that's really good. At least I hope that's what it turns out to be.
Oh, hell yeah. Never thought I'd be waiting 3 months for a CD, but this sounds pretty cool. And it's only on the Blu-ray. There's also a documentary about the film's production with Byrne, Ed Lachman. And by the way, and we're going to get into the transfer, but the transfer was supervised and approved by David Byrne and Ed Lachman. So I'm just going to say, I think they knew what they're doing, but that's just a little tease. But one thing I didn't realize, the writer was Stephen Tobolowsky. Apparently, he did a podcast. I haven't had a chance to listen to it yet, but I'm going to after, actually, next time I drive through Texas. But, we watched he was at a film festival that we were at, and he's just such a marvelous guy. And what a career. I haven't listened to his podcast, but yeah, I didn't know he's a part of this.
Yeah, I listened to that episode of the Tobolowsky Files, and it's a pretty fascinating story. He goes through everything from how they got sort of recruited to work on the project, the genesis of it, the development of it, all the way through to how he ended up getting the specific credit that he did. Mm. It's really interesting. It starts off with, you know, Jonathan Demme just runs into them in their neighborhood, says, hey, come over and hang out at the house.
And that's with Beth Henley. We don't want to leave Beth Henley
right.
out.
They're together walking, okay. You know, taking their evening constitutional. Jonathan Demme says, hey, come over and hang out. They go to his house. They go upstairs to the movie theater that he has. And there are the Talking Heads. And the seven of them watch the work print of Stop Making Sense.
Wow.
Just because they happen to be taking a walk in the neighborhood.
Wow. That's an awesome walk.
Yeah. It's a really fun story.
That is so cool, and that we've been looking for Stop Making Sense. I mean, I don't know that there's been any credible rumors other than just the fact that there's a relationship with David Byrne, and it's not on Blu-ray. But man, I would please happen, please. I love that concert documentary. Let's see, we also have a short documentary by Pamela Yates and Newton Thomas Seigel, Real Life, based on made on the set of the film. And then No Time to Look Back, a new homage to Virgil, Texas, which is the fictional town. Is this, this is very close to your heart. Would you say this compares well with Slacker?
It's so offbeat. I don't think it's quite the same thing. It's apples and oranges. It's definitely, it sort of passes you from one little piece of the story to the next, but it has David Byrne as your connective tissue to all of that. And he's making these sort of left field wry observations throughout that just hit me right in the heart. Everything he says to me in this is so on point and funny, and it exposes something about the time and place that he's talking about, but he manages to do it without being cruel. And I don't think he's doing it at the expense of anyone. So it's a really fine balance that he strikes, but it is different from Slacker to me.
I think like Slacker, it's a time and place that we will never see again.
True. Yeah, I think that's for certain. I haven't seen it, and I think I can agree with that. One thing I've noticed is it seems like the reaction or the memory of it is, I wouldn't say mixed. I think most people appreciate it, especially if they like Byrne and the Talking Heads. But just your opinion of the film, I mean, is this something that's going to be a big discovery for people this year?
I'll just speak from my own experience. I knew what it was, had grown up with it, but had never seen it until 2 days ago. And it's one of these films that I wished I had seen when I was a kid, because I would have identified so closely with it. I think it would have made a huge impact and difference to me as a person who felt different than everybody else. And so I think, like me, people will absolutely find this to be a new discovery and something that they're so delighted to come upon.
Yeah, I can't predict how I'll respond to a film, but it kind of seems that way to me. What about you, Cole? What's your opinion on the film?
I didn't even realize how important this one was to me until I saw the announcement and everything came flooding back. When I was a denizen of my local video store when I was 16, I rented this over and over and watched it so many times I can't even count. And I think it was because it's such a joyful thing. Okay. It was one of those things, it taught me that a number of valuable lessons, but most importantly, to say those weird things that I was thinking out loud.
It spoke to you.
Like Erica said, it was one of those things that there are people out there like me, other weirdos that are operating on this wavelength, and I just need to go find them, and they're wonderful, witty, warm, funny people.
Yeah, I don't remember this movie being around too much in my childhood, and maybe that says something about maybe I didn't find those witty, warm, weird people. So I think I know a few of them now. And I love a few of them now. There's also a program about Tibor Kalman. So speaking of that that cover art and his influence on Byrne and the film. So that's with, I don't know if, is he alive still? I know I shouldn't have to ask that, but I didn't look it up.
I wonder about that because I want to say no. I want to say I don't think so. But again, I have not checked.
Well, there's this thing I'm going to called Google, and I'll get back to you on that. And that's the month. So, there's also the Bergman set. So the Bergman set, that's a pretty big deal. We've talked about it ad nauseum here, so I'll just I'll go to Erica. You have to be looking forward to this thing.
I am, and this was my prediction from the episode that we were on previously. Prediction is not quite the most accurate word, but I'm just going to say that I said in the face of all of you that this was going to happen and everyone naysayed it, and now it's come true.
There you go. You were right. We're all wrong, except for Keith.
Right.
Right. Just he and I.
Just he and I. I think he knew.
I can't wait for this. I'm so excited to see everything with it, especially that book. And the highlight this year for Cole and I, not to speak for you, Cole, is that we've been having such a great time seeing these films for the centenary all over the world.
Yeah, on the big screen. So far, we've been to see The Seventh Seal, Cries and Whispers, Smiles of a Summer Night. Next month, we'll have the opportunity to see The Magician, Summer with Monica, The Silence, and Persona.
Wow. So all fantastic films.
Yeah, it's going to be super fun.
And we got to see The Seventh Seal in Oslo and see original
Prince.
That's
right.
It was amazing.
That's right. I guess we talked right before you went there, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, wow. That had to be a fantastic experience. I'm using the word fantastic a lot today. I need to find it.
It definitely qualifies. We have definitely already pre-ordered our Bergman box, and fortunately, it took us just over the level that we get a $50 gift certificate out of it. So, instant rebate.
High five. So, you ordered from Criterion?
Yep.
Sweet. So, okay, it's curated on based on film festival style. So, the opening film is Smiles of a Summer Night, and closing is Fanning and Alexander. So, have you decided, and obviously you're watching 6-7 films, you know, this summer, so are you going to go back, go through chronologically and kind of make your way, or are you just going to save some for a rainy day or go with their curation?
Personally, I'm going to do chronology. What are you going to do, Cole?
I like the idea of going their curation. Since I've seen so many of them already, it will just be a different experience to just go along with what they've laid out as a program and see how they work with each other. That's what I'm looking forward to.
I've seen mostly kind of reverse order almost, so I'm interested to see how that structure plays out.
Well, just advice, because you're married, you might want to get on the same page there. Otherwise, you'll be watching Fanny Alexander, and he'll be watching Smiles of a Summer Night. And by the way, Timur Kalman passed away in 1999. So he's been gone a good while. Lived until he was, only 49. Wow, that's...
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, and by the image that that was shared was of a Talking Heads album cover. So yeah, I've talked about Bergman ad nauseum. I am thrilled. I can't believe we're getting that and all this. I mean, four great titles. I know that we were maybe lukewarm to luke positive on Some Like It Hot. And, you know, I think it's all relative. I think if it were like a December with, I don't know, Tom Jones, this would... Some Like It Hot would look like a gold mine. So do we even have to ask? Rate the month, Cole.
Oh, it's a straight 12 out of 10 for me, just for True Stories in the Bergman box. I couldn't ask for more than that.
Same for me.
Yeah, and Amberson's Chikamatsu is one I'm really looking forward to. And I'm going to enjoy Some Like It Hot, too. It's going to be an expensive month, and it's gonna, and I'm going to have to find some time. And I think the Bergman box, of course, is going to be, you know, we're going to go a little while on that. Maybe through the winter. That'll be a seasonal watch. A season of Bergman. That sounds pretty good. So should we talk about the teal thing?
Sure.
Okay. I don't know if everybody has seen this, but... and Cole, I think you've read a good bit of this as well, so feel free to jump in and correct me. But some people found a screenshot or an image from the film, I believe it was on Criterion's website. Is that right?
Yeah, cool. I think so.
So they found an image. They compared it to an image that was from the VHS. It was either the VHS or an old DVD. And so they said that, and there was very, there were colors were different. And the new one had a teal tint. And of course, if anybody remembers Bull Durham, there were some comments, some similar comments. And there have been comments on others, not just about teal. I remember Mulholland Drive, people had issues with the color grading there. I didn't notice. I thought it looked fantastic. I said fantastic again. So they said, Criterion doesn't know what they're doing. A few people made a little bit of a stink in social media, and I think some other corners of the internet. Saying that, hey, they're ruining these films, stop color grading them. So, all right, Cole, I know you have some opinions. Erica, before I know Cole is going to have some passionate opinions. Do you have any opinions? Do you care if there's teal?
I don't care. I want it to look as the filmmakers and everyone involved with it intended it to look. And that's all I'm going to say. I'm going to step back here and let you guys take over.
All right, Cole, bring it.
Okay, go with me on this journey.
All right.
I like to think of all these little quibbles, all the way down to the person that's the, I only watch the most pristine Blu-rays on the highest quality system. All I can ever think is, you have no idea how good you have it.
Exactly.
When I started to get interested in movies, I was around 6 years old, and I had what was on television. A shitty 19-inch television that probably weighed 200 pounds, and you could choose from three networks, PBS, and a handful of UHF channels. And if we took all of these complainers back to that as a starting place, they would lose their minds. But wait, I'll even sweeten the deal. After 4 years of that, you'll get VHS technology and standard definition cable television with Porky's, Excalibur, The Four Seasons, all of that on a loop. Endure that for 15 years, and then you get DVD.
Pan and scan.
So that's what I have gone through. And if you wanted to learn anything about film, you either have to see them via one of these methods, go to the theater, or go somewhere outside of your house to find out, like a library. And film scholarship wasn't even a thing, really. then, so there wasn't that much to choose from. So my message is basically, get over yourselves.
Yeah.
And appreciate the vast wealth of film that's available to you. Some of it piped directly into your house that you don't even have to get off your couch to see and learn about.
From yep. all over the world, all time periods, everything is available to you.
Yeah.
I know. What a time to be alive. I've said that many, many times. I'm one of those people. I have an Oppo just about 20 feet away from me, and I have a 65-screen TV right there, and everything just looks fantastic. And, you know, it doesn't compare to the theatrical experience, but it's gotten a lot closer than the days of the 19-inch. And home media is, this month is just a prime example. I mean, just such gems that 20 years ago, I would have loved to have seen all these, but I couldn't. I mean, it's like Erica said, it's all available to you. So, and then as to the specific argument, and I have a little inside info. I shouldn't say inside info, but we all follow this pretty closely and have an idea how they operate and how they restore discs. And I know that Criterion has their own restoration team, and I know that they work on the color grading. So even if it was teal, and it was wrong, it's not a done deal. They started complaining the day it was announced. So it was just based on a screenshot. Who knows where that screenshot came from? On the other hand, there's also the author's intent. And so some people, there's one person in particular that was taking issue if, you know, Byrne and Lachman were changing the history of it. But Cole, you just went through the history of home media exhibition of these titles, and we don't need that.
Yeah, it wasn't great.
It kind of sucked.
It's great now.
Yeah. I was still able to get the emotional weight of The Incredible Hulk when I was 4, but I'm glad to see new things now.
Me too. And, you know, if you really are pining for that VHS, I'm sure you can buy it. Maybe VHS will make a comeback. Maybe, you know, speaking of vinyl and even CD, maybe there's a market for that. And while you're at it, get an 8-track.
There's definitely a market for the VHS thing, because surprisingly, there are still some things that have not carried over. My number one wish list item of all time, Betrayal, the Harold Pinter movie. Mm. Is still only available on VHS, and especially genre stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Arrow and a lot of labels like that are doing a lot of good stuff, saving those things and bringing them back. But there are things that are never going to exist in any other format. So it's possible that VHS could become one of those vinyl 8-track sort of really niche collectible things.
Mm-hmm. I think that the visual, the grainy, you know, sort of wavy look of a VHS film has become almost kind of a novelty, and you know, it goes hand in hand with the 80s when you see that, and I think it's kind of cherished. So, and speaking of the cover, you know, that John Goodman looks like it's from a VHS tape, and I don't know, that might be a poster or some cover art elsewhere, but yeah, I'm fine with the teal. Did you watch the Bull Durham disc?
Yeah, we did actually. Just a couple weeks ago.
A month ago, yeah.
Okay, so did the teal bother you?
Not a single iota.
Didn't notice it. I saw it in the theater. Couldn't tell you what that experience was like versus this one.
Mm-hmm. So I just want to credit our friends in social media, and I think probably the majority of listeners won't have an idea what I'm talking about. But we just know some funny ass people, and I'm talking to a couple of them. So we've had a little fun with the teal situation. I guess Criterion or Criterion Teal Ray is coming soon to you. And what's your favorite teal movie? King of Jazz was a two color process, teal and everything else. So yeah, it's been a lot of fun, but yeah, I'm with you, Cole. Get over yourself, teal enthusiasts or teal haters, and it's probably not going to be. Oh, and somebody else pointed out that they know that scene, and the scene should be teal. All right, well, we have some Criterion stuff. So of course, the new releases are the Ballad of Gregorio Cortez came out, and this is one I really, really wanted to see this week, and I just didn't get to it. In fact, might watch it tonight. I'm watching the Avengers, but boy, there's so many superheroes that it just takes forever to get through it. So I don't, I'll probably get my way through that and then get to a good movie. No, it's fine. Are you Avengers fans?
Moderately. I think we're bigger Black Panther fans.
Yeah. Wakanda forever. Everybody else don't Wakanda. Really care. Oh, and Wonder Woman. I really liked Wonder Woman.
Really?
DC,
okay.
Marvel. Different, okay. Different houses.
Sorry.
It is different. Yeah. That would be something if she showed up. Well, Black Panther's in this, so we'll see. He just showed up, and I was just watching it during the storm. So anyway, I prefer to see the Ballad of Gregorio Cortez. I saw that Keith really enjoyed it, and he watched it the other day, and then he watched Alan Brista. Have you all seen it? I know it's kind of a new one.
I've seen it. Did you watch it?
I didn't watch it. I just watched the trailer, but I think you've got more interesting stuff to say.
Yeah, I saw it, and I liked it. It's a good film. It's certainly one that's been overlooked and deserving of a larger reputation. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed the authenticity of it, I think, was probably the big thing for me. Filming it in the actual cell that Gregorio Cortez was kept in 1901, that's pretty amazing.
Huh. But, you know, Cole, and I say this coming from somebody that's logged like 6,000 or 7,000 movies on Letterboxd, you've seen everything. And I mean that in the best way possible.
It's all I do anymore.
Well, I have to toot my own horn for a second, though, because our latest Patreon mini episode was about something that I brought to Cole for the first time. So occasionally,
things that I've never heard of. You're right.
Oh, good. Which was that?
These were two Per Lawrence documentaries: The Plow That Broke the Plains and The River.
Okay, has that come out yet? I didn't notice.
No, these are much older films.
Okay.
1936 and 1938.
I meant the Patreon episode.
Oh, no.
Sorry.
That one will be two from now. The one on Monday is about the punk panic of the early 80s, and then 2 weeks later will be the Per Lawrence episode.
Wow. Well, again, with the great transition, so this coming week is Smithereens is coming out, and also Heaven Can Wait, which I guess you can't really draw a parallel with the two, but Smithereens... I haven't seen that. Have you seen that, Cole?
Yeah, this may turn out to be one of my releases of the year, where I think
really?
Desperately Seeking Susan is Erica's Susan Seidelman movie. This one is mine.
Okay.
I love everything about this. The score by the Feelies. I love how sometimes super unlikable Susan Berman is. It's got a really twitchy energy to it. And I like how actually with very few characters, you get the feeling of an actual scene.
And Susan Seidelman is great at that. She is perfect at that.
Yeah.
And I even think, and I'm not, you know, the biggest Madonna fan, but I think she kind of captured that with Desperately Seeking Susan as well. Although I haven't seen it since like 1988 or whenever it was that came out. So maybe I shouldn't speak of things. I don't know. Have you seen Smithereens, Erica?
I haven't.
Okay.
And this was one, I think, like True Stories, though actually different from True Stories. Smithereens was not something I was aware of. It was possibly even... too indie for where I grew up.
Me too. Well, I was in San Fran, so never mind. I didn't see it though. I think I'd moved to the Southeast by the time this came out. And then Heaven Can Wait, Ernst Lubitsch, and it's a upgrade cover by our good friend Caitlin Kuwald. So I'm gonna give it another shot. I confuse this one with Trouble in Paradise, but I think this is the one I liked less of, and Lubitsch, I think this is the only one I haven't really, like, absolutely adored. But do you have opinions on Heaven Can Wait?
I think this falls in the category that Some Like It Hot might be for others. I love Lubitsch, but Don Ameche has never been one of my favorites. I do like Gene Tierney, but I'm just more familiar with the remake, actually. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, me too. Although Don Ameche, he does have Cocoon going for him a little later. And then next week is Memories of Underdevelopment. So that's probably the one I'm looking forward to most of this month. If I haven't seen it, but that's my prediction of my favorite release of the month, and I could be wrong. Have you seen it, Cole?
No, I haven't. I'm looking very much forward to this one. I've been reading about it for years, and
me
I'm
too.
Really excited about the prospect. It seems like it's one of those that it's really hard to fully fathom how pivotal it is when you can point at a film and say that this is likely the most important and defining piece of cinema our country has ever produced.
Yeah.
That's amazing. I can't point to a single American film and say that.
Well, you could have a lot of arguments about that, but yeah, Cuba's had a couple good ones, and I think, you know, the bar's pretty high with I Am Cuba, Soy Cuba. I guess, I don't know if that's, we call that Russian or Cuban, but yeah, pretty excited about that. I think that's one, as we like to say, and Keith, thank you for giving this to, it's going right in the player, which actually I plan to do with Gregorio Cortez, and didn't happen. So the next piece of news is good old friend John Waters. So he teases that Polyester is coming, and he said it's going to be in 2019, restored and distributed as part of the Criterion Collection. So thank you, John Waters, for taking the suspense out, because I like to know these things. Erica, do you like John Waters?
I adore John Waters. He's also just a prince of a human being, too. And I'm so delighted to see his work in the collection. I think maybe more than anything, I find that to be the most important development to the collection as a whole for all of us. We could argue that.
You lived in Baltimore for a long time, right?
I did.
So,
oh, really?
Yeah, you have a real sense of the places that he's talking about. And
Did you ever hang with any of them?
He came into the theater that I worked at. I worked with Steve Yeager, who directed Divine Trash.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, he's just a lovely guy. You'll just see him around, and that's absolutely wonderful. He's incredibly approachable. Talk about creating a scene.
Yeah.
Talk about creating a place that we will not really ever see again, but you can still go to Baltimore and be appalled.
Yeah.
You can still go to Baltimore and be appalled. That's a great quote. You definitely won't see that scene again, and he certainly created one. I'm not going to say Female Trouble was a masterpiece, but it was a revelation. It was really quite an experience, and I don't know if enjoy is the word, but man, I sure did appreciate it. it was out there. I haven't seen Polyester, so is it more in the theme of Female Trouble or and Multiple Maniacs, or is it a little tamer?
It's tamer. It's definitely R versus X rated. It's a little bit more mainstream. John Waters. It's one of those, but it still has all those hallmarks, even down to the character names. Francine Fishpaw. There is nobody, maybe this side of W.C. Fields, that comes up with funnier character names.
Oh, they're great.
And the thing I'm super hoping for with this one is that it comes with an Odorama card.
Right. I say
right.
Important.
Oh, yeah.
I wish that, like with True Stories for Cole, I wish that young people will, the right young people will find this work and realize, oh, there's a place for me.
Yeah. My favorite John Waters, I'm sorry, Aaron, were you going to say something?
Oh, no, go, please go, please go.
My favorite Polyester story that John Waters tells is about how they did a screening of this where they piped in the smells to the theater, but it never occurred to them that the smells would linger and build upon one another instead of dissipating in time for the next one. So by the time they got to the end, it was just this horrendous miasma hovering in the theater, completely inescapable.
Yeah, we had a concert experience like that recently, but yeah, I think it was maybe a Taco Bell adventure. Anyway, not ours. Yeah, I wonder if this will be the first Scratch and Sniff Criterion disc.
That would be pretty good. We should say also R.I.P. Tab Hunter.
Thank you.
Oh, was he in the? That's right. He was in this.
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah, he just passed.
He tells great stories about it too. If you see the documentary film, yeah.
Well, hopefully they'll include some of that. I mean, we have no idea what'll be on the release, but yeah, I'm really looking for. More John Waters, go Criterion. The article says this is part of a trilogy with Hairspray and Crybaby. So those are certainly far tamer than. And I still haven't seen what is it, the worst one.
Pink Flamingos,
yeah, because I don't know if we'll ever get that one.
You might have to turn your head once or twice.
Really? Well, I have a good stomach, but we'll see. So anyway, more John Waters. And then there's also, so Samantha Fuller tweeted out that 40 Guns is coming out to the collection. Now, this is one I'm going to kind of say, give you some caution, because she has been, obviously she's she's holding the estate, and she's a champion of her father's film. She made a documentary about it, but she also said that her documentary was going to be on Filmstruck. Or, I'm sorry, on Criterion, and it eventually was on Filmstruck. So I don't know if she's reliable, or if this means that it's going to be on disc, or if it's going to come streaming. But I've seen it, and I think it's pretty... I would say it's middle-tier Sam Fuller. It's pretty good. It's a good genre film. Have you seen it, Cole?
No, unfortunately, we missed our chance. Austin Film Society had it here on the big screen a couple years ago, and I've been kicking myself ever since that we missed that one. It seems like an odd choice, I think, to get a full disc release. It might have belonged more in an Eclipse box. It's maybe on the level of The Baron of Arizona, which is a film that I really like, but it is not top-tier Fuller, I agree.
And maybe it could be, because Indicator put out a bunch of Fullers, and I think those were actually region-free, so I don't know how the rights work, but Erica, I guess you probably haven't seen 40 Guns either, but do you like Sam Fuller?
I do. We just got a great box. That's and have been enjoying that.
I haven't opened that yet. So you recommend it?
Very much so. It's got terrific newspaper befitting Samuel Fuller. Great newspaper films. It's just a slam bang good time.
That's a good description of a Sam Fuller film. You know, it's there's some art, but it's just so entertaining too. And I'd say 40 Guns falls in that category. I have is it Masters of Cinema or Arrow? One of the two. And that's how I saw it. And it was good. And this is a little bit of kind of just a personal slant, because I was just in Canada, and my friends Brad and David talked about the Canadian NFB. And I noticed, and they were like, hey, it would be nice to get some exposure to this. Criterion or elsewhere, and I saw that Criterion retweeted an NFB status, so I'm not reading tea leaves, but I just think that's cool. And it was about Norman McLaren and his time at the National Film Board, so it might just be them recognizing the history of the film board, but yeah, do you guys know anything about Canadian film besides Guy Madden and...
Yeah, have I mentioned on this show? I think I mentioned on our show before how much I love Canada. So many of my favorite things are Canadian. The Constantines, the Deadly Snakes, the Trailer Park Boys, Peanut Butter. That comes from Canada. Canada's awesome. Yeah, Peanut Butter was invented in Canada.
Boy, there's some revisionist history then, because I was told.
And the National Film Board of Canada is one of my favorite of all those things. If it weren't for them, we wouldn't have stuff like Paddle to the Sea. No Arthur Lipsett, who friend of the show R.J. Tugas introduced me to.
Cool.
No City of Gold, and that influenced everybody from Ken Burns to Bill Morrison. And no McLaren either.
Yeah, and I was just thinking Morrison. Sorry, go ahead, Erica.
And you've got to check out their website. It is so cool. And we watched some McLaren on it today, Pas de Deux.
That thing's amazing.
Nice. Yeah, I love Canada too. It's tough coming back from it. It's also cheap there for us. It was nice to look at that credit card statement. And then we have I think we've told everybody we're switching up the Filmstruck. We're not going to do the thing is the Filmstruck's become too massive for us to do a full thing on it. It just has become kind of a slog. So we're just going to talk about more as a news item, but. There are two big releases. So My Brilliant Career is already on Filmstruck, and that one was rumored to be the clue for... it was kind of a controversial clue, yeah, but people concluded that it was probably My Brilliant Career. Now, it's on Filmstruck, so I think that pretty much confirms it. And then Smithereens is also on Filmstruck, and it's paired with Lick the Star from... is that Coppola?
Yeah, Sophia Coppola.
Yeah, so that was part of their Tuesday double feature. So yeah, if you don't want to buy the disc, and of course I always advocate getting physical media if you can, but it's there to stream. So have you seen My Brilliant Career?
No, it's a big hole in my Australian film catalog. I am a huge booster of Australian film. And again, we have so many people in our groups, mutual friends of ours, that put me on to really fantastic discoveries. It's hard not to just constantly talk about that on the show all the time, because they're introducing me to something amazing probably every 2 weeks.
I think it was the first time I'd heard of Judy Davis as well, but I still haven't seen it.
Yeah, me neither. Yeah, shout out to Andrew, who pretty much spends most of his time championing Australian film. And of course, Tim as well is a friend of the show, and there are others. So yeah, I need to see more. I think the Australian New Wave was just brilliant. I guess this kind of comes on the heels of it, no pun intended, female filmmaker. But looking forward to it. And then, okay, one more news item, and this one's a little personal. I discovered that somebody had squatted the Criterion Now domain name. I found it on accident, and it's a religious school, La Sierra, is it? And they have a podcast, and it's by a guy named Aaron. So somebody asked if I've been doing stuff in my sleep, and I responded, hey, I think this might be where I realize that I'm Tyler Durden. So yeah, there is another Criterion Now. I should be telling our listeners, if you go to CriterionNow.com, you're not going to find us. Go to Criterion Cast. But yeah, go check.
If their show's also about teal, then you're going to know something's really up.
Yeah, and what's funny is they have a podcast, and somebody pointed that out, and I looked, and it's all on YouTube. So, and I know we put podcasts on YouTube, but does that count? Cole,
We have a YouTube channel where we just put up the audio feeds with kind of a slideshow, and I wouldn't say, you know, it doesn't pull nearly the listeners that the regular feed does, but people do check it out on a very regular basis. It's the way that some people only listen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we have a lot of people in our communities that do a lot of YouTubing. So, not me quite yet, but yeah, I haven't put the show, but I have a feeling that our listener base is probably a little bigger than theirs. Just saying. So, although they have a whole school, so who knows? Maybe my head's too big. All right. Well, we have our short takes where we talk about a movie, the Criterion that we've seen lately. So I'm going to go ladies first. Erica, what do you have?
Okay, I could be fudging this a little bit because I'm not sure that it's technically Criterion. It did get branded that way, and it is on Filmstruck. But regardless.
Counts.
Okay, thank you. I chose The Clock from 1945, directed by Vincent Minnelli with Judy Garland and Robert Walker. I chose this because I think it's incredibly special, and I'm really hoping to get some folks to check it out and fall in love with it the same way that I love it. It's incredibly intimate. It does that thing that I love movies to do. We've talked about this a couple of times today. It's to show you what it was like to live through a time that you will never see again. Judy Garland is luminous. I already knew, and millions of people do, that she's capable of making an incredibly deep emotional connection with the audience. It's essentially a hangout movie. It's romantic. It has beautiful, beautiful, intimate moments. Coming back to it, it reminded me so much of Cole and I as well. And Cole, when you see it, you're going to recognize jumping through those hoops when you want to get married at the day that you want to get married. Okay. It's servicemen saying goodbye to families to try to make sure that their affairs are in order. It was released on May 25th, 1945, just a few months before the war officially ended. So I don't want to say more. It's just beautiful. Go out and see it, please.
I've given a lot of shout-outs this episode, but I should also shout-out that Matt has been watching all the Vincent Minnelli films and given his takes, so I think he's put it out there on Letterboxd, so I have to check to see if he has any thoughts on that. I should also tell the listeners that we have a storm here, so I think we're safe. If I get electrocuted during an episode, well, then I hope it was a good one. Cole, do you have a short take? Maybe we should speed it up just in case.
Okay. Sorry.
No, you're fine. I just as I said that, I was like, well, no, I don't want that to happen. Cole, what's your short take?
I do have one, and it is Stalker. We just got to see it on the big screen, and it is something to behold that way. When it makes that initial shift from the sepia tone to full color the first time, it was like somebody went into my brain and metaphorically just threw open all the windows. It's like Bergman, it's been a big Tarkovsky year at the cinema for us. We've seen Mirror, The Sacrifice, and now this, fortunately. I still think Mirror is my favorite, but seeing it like this moved Stalker up the list for sure.
Yeah, both of those would be just revelatory to see in the theaters. But that's pretty long, 3 hours.
So yeah.
You hung in there?
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
Definitely.
Oh, yeah.
It almost
oh, yeah.
even
you're
if
pros.
You even if you don't hang in there, it becomes like a lucid dream. So
yeah,
you can
yeah,
even
you know, that's a good
give
point.
Into that.
There you go. There's lots of ways to watch it. Kind of like Jean Dielman. You know, you can kind of get wrapped up in the I hate to say monotony because it's. But that's her intention, is to show you the monotony or of domestic life. So, well, mine is a good one, I think, The Scarlet Empress. So I'm most of the way through the Dietrich von Sternberg set. And this is my third or fourth time seeing this. And I'd seen the DVD. So the print looks fantastic. There, I said it again. The print looks great, but, you know, it's, of course, memories not always accurate, given the whole teal thing. But I don't remember it being in teal. But it didn't seem to be much better than the old one. So maybe that was just my perception. But, yeah, speaking of visual brilliance, so, and I, having watched the other four, which are visually inventive, and von Sternberg sure was, but, you know, they're for the most part, studio... I guess I wouldn't say action films, but kind of mainstream films in a way. They're sort of thrillers in a way. This is a biopic, and it's a lot more artistic, but it's also fast paced. In fact, I forgot how much I got carried away watching the story of Catherine the Great. And by the way, they take a lot of historical license with it.
they do.
I got a history degree since then. Not that I studied this era too closely. But yeah, and of course they also have the really really good, the really really bad, but it's also a pre-code movie, and yeah, there's some, it's not as I guess ostentatious about it as say Blonde Venus was, but they're Dietrich made no secret that she liked her Russian men there. Anyway, I highly recommend not just for the cinematography and the lighting and the set design. Boy, those gargoyles, just amazing. Mm-hmm. This is one you could watch with the volume off and just be blown away by it. But yeah, I think it's just a magnificent film. Couple minor quibbles with the story, but and maybe some of the historical accuracy. I think the bad king, you know, he was a little over the top, but. But yeah, anyway, that's a great set. Have you all tackled that set?
We have it, but I haven't cracked the cellophane on it yet. I'm waiting for just the right day where I can go through a lot of it at one time.
And I haven't seen Scarlet Empress for years.
It's good. And Cole, when you unwrap that, that's going to be a good day. I'm just saying. it's quite a set. There was also a Dietrich interview from 1972, I think. And I thought, oh, great, it's going to be, you know, an older Dietrich reflecting on her life. And it kind of was, but boy, she sure, apparently she had invented or some form of, like a facelift kind of thing. So she, I guess, taped her forehead, and it does look odd, but she certainly didn't look 70. And I think she lived to like 90. So yeah, still had that flair about her, and boy, what an actress! So confident, and that role, I think especially, I just everything that was Dietrich, just the icon, just kind of coalesced into that performance. And I use the word with Monroe, but the sultriness, the sly, devious look, and of course her foreign heritage contributes to that a little bit. But anyway, I'm gonna get washed away here, so. Piece of flair. Cole, do you have a piece of flair? No, nothing Criterion here.
Right. I just wanted to talk real quick this time about my experience as a screener for the Austin Film Festival. That
awesome.
Was my piece of flair. I'm always looking for ways to interact with our film community here, and this is one that I recommend to anyone that lives where this sort of thing is a possibility. Get involved with your local festivals, even on the volunteer level. It helps them out. You'll benefit. They'll frequently reward you with access or passes to whatever event you're helping with. In this case, I screened a lot for the documentary competition, and I've seen stuff from one end of the spectrum to the other, both in terms of quality, for sure,
yeah,
and subject matter. One or two things impress me so much that they'll eventually turn up on either our regular show or as Patreon bonus episodes, and we can mention them specifically after October, after the festival happens. But there were a couple of really great discoveries, so go out there and get involved with your local scene.
Absolutely. I'm involved with mine, and in fact, this next year, we have a little Southeast Film Festival here called Indie Grits, and I think I'm going to get more involved with that. It always happens, and I'm always busy, but I'm going to give it an honest effort. And also, I'm kind of helping them out. They're looking for a CEO, so I'm trying to help them find one. But Erica, do you have a piece of flair?
I do. It's not film related. Is that allowed?
It's fine.
Okay. We just got the Rockford Files complete collection, and I am loving it.
Awesome. I should say, as long as it's media related, so you're in good territory.
Great.
So I remember the Rockford Files growing up, and I remember I didn't watch it. So would you recommend it as a, there's probably a lot of episodes.
Yeah, there are 122. I'm starting back at the beginning. I had only ever seen a few in my life, and it's delightful to see James Garner's effortless charisma, the amazing music, how tightly scripted every episode is. It's less about the central mystery and more about mystery and enigma in life itself.
It has a real kind of late period Marlowe feeling to it, I think, to me. Is that how it feels to you?
I agree. Definitely.
And I like Garner, too. I was just pulling him up. I was trying to think of... I know he's done some film. Well, The Great Escape, that was a big one. And Space Cowboys and The Notebook. So, mixed results. All right, well, my piece of flair, I had less to choose from this week, but what arrived in the mail was the DVD, the Blu-ray set of Documentary Now, the first and second season. So I haven't put it in yet. I just got it yesterday, and... And this has been pointed out in our Facebook group, but they mocked the Criterion collection with their DVD cover. They took how the spine on the side, they had the little rectangle. Mm-hmm. They did that as if it's a spine number. So I thought that was very clever. And when I first saw that it was just the first two seasons, I thought, oh man, that's probably done. But my wife says, and I haven't researched this on my own, but it sounds like they're filming the third season. So that's good news. She mentioned they're doing something about Sondheim, so that's
going.
Yeah, more obscure documentaries go Documentary Now. So yeah, that's it. I think the storm passed too. Could you hear the rain?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it
I can hear
like
your
it's
gutters.
Tailing off for sure.
Yeah, good. It's a small one. So where can we find you? So I think I failed to mention at the beginning that you are part of the Magic Lantern podcast, and you're just on a roll of that Chinatown. So where can people find you?
They can find us on Facebook. We have a Facebook group that Travis Trudell helped us set up that's been really fun lately. Just the Magic Lantern podcast Facebook group. You can search that on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube. We're on Twitter @lantern_cast. And if you want all the episodes with our supplementary links and everything, it's just magiclanternpodcast.com.
Otherwise, find us wherever you get your podcasts.
Yep. Wherever you get them. I forgot that, I was glad to see that you created a group. I mean, it's just a great way to interact, and you've been sharing some really, really interesting factoids. I really appreciated being in there. And it looks like it's growing a good bit, too.
Yeah.
So, more groups. Well, no, maybe not more groups. Go Facebook. There's plenty of groups. Erica, anywhere besides Magic Lantern you want to be found?
You can find me at Erica Long. That's with two C's.
At Twitter?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Well, you can find me at AWES505 on Twitter, and you can find the show at Criterion Cast. You can find us in the Facebook group, find the Patreon. You can find us.